Well, as many of you know, before coming chaplain to the oil and gas industry, I spent a long time, 24 years, as a Royal Air Force chaplain. And towards the end of last year, I succumbed to temptation and accepted an offer to return to the Air Force as a reservist chaplain. And today, I stand before you in that role. I hope you forgive my self-indulgence this morning, but as a Royal Air Force chaplain, Battle of Britain Sunday has always meant a great deal. It was always part of the community to which I minister to and part of the ethos. And so I stand dressed as an RAF chaplain to commemorate and to perhaps reflect on the events of 1940 this morning. But whether, when I was deliberating whether or not to theme the Battle of Britain this morning, I was swayed by a number of events that have occurred recently. I hope you all realise that this year sees the 100th anniversary of the formation of the Royal Air Force. There have been numerous events, including the spectacular flypast over London in July. 2 weeks ago, I had the privilege of being on duty at the RAF 100 event in Glasgow. And thousands of people attended to look at aircraft on display from a World War I Sopwith Snipe fighter to the brand new Lightning just entering service now. The highlight of the days in Glasgow for me was the arrival of a bus from Erskine Hospital, which caters for veterans and their families. And I had this charming conversation with this old gentleman suffering from Alzheimer's. He told me quite clearly that he had just recently left Glasgow and was loving life in the Royal Air Force. He was an aircraft engineer, flying in multi-engined aircraft, and he confided in me which pilots I should look out for, the good ones and the bad ones. The ones who would just drop him from 10,000 feet in a major dive and then pull out and make him feel ill, or the careful ones. He'd been transported all the way back to World War II, probably helped by the fact that some current young pilots were standing around by a Spitfire in World War II flying gear. But it was a real joy to see this old chap smiling, laughing, and actually reliving his youth. But another event which made me decide to opt for a Battle of Britain theme this morning was the recent death of a great hero of mine, Geoffrey Mellum. Geoffrey Mellum was an old gent I had met on numerous occasions and who had written one of the best books ever written on the personal experiences of a pilot during the Battle of Britain. A number of years ago, I had been in London attending a function with a colleague and our wives. And we went to the location which many of us used to go to, the RAF Club, because it was cheap for lunch. And as we looked around, we came aware that there were a number of elderly gentlemen having a laugh and making a bit of a noise in the bar. And I thought I recognised one or two of these characters, but just couldn't place their faces. Anyway, we found some seats, and my colleague and I went to the bar to order some food and drink. And when we returned to our table, we found an old gent with his arms round both our wives, obviously enjoying himself, giving them the full Monty, chatting them up, and they were loving it. And then I saw who this old chap was. It was Geoffrey Mellum. We'd met a few times before, and I'd certainly read his book, which is called First Light, more than once. Geoffrey Mellum was the youngest British pilot who fought in the Battle of Britain. He joined the RAF age 17, straight from school, and by the time he was 18, he was flying with 92 Squadron from Biggin Hill at the height of the Battle of Britain, aged 18. And in that bar, these years ago, and it was these Battle of Britain few were there because it was the 70th anniversary of the Battle of Britain at that time, and they were doing some filming for a documentary. 70 years on, as he had his arms round my wife, I could still see he exhibited exactly the same cheeky personality that came across in his book. A book that he put together through diary articles he was writing at age 18. And if any of you have any sort of passing interest in the Battle of Britain, I strongly suggest that you read Geoffrey Whelan's book. He wrote it from notes and diaries he kept at the time. And I'd like to quote from the book, words written at the height of the Battle of Britain, which for me highlight the importance of marking the day. And remember, these were the words of an 18-year-old teenager. This is what he writes. "Nobody, I don't care who he is, will ever be able to forget such times as these if they survive. It won't take too long for those not involved to forget, though. After all, they're safe. There's been no invasion as yet. Then what? After the war is over. How many will remember or give a thought to, apart from the next of kin, of course, in 20 years' time, or 20 months for that matter, the battles that are going on over their heads at this moment? They will just take for granted that German stormtroopers are not parading up the Mall or changing the guard at Buckingham Palace for Hitler. We fighter pilots are all very popular at the moment, and no hostess can fail if she has some of us at her party. People want to know us and talk. But you wait and see. When we beat the Germans, it will be convenient to forget. And because the RAF officer is not quite the one to know, we will be right out on the pavement. If we fail, however, and not beat the Germans, then we will be blamed. Young men die for these options. Nobody wants reward. Just a quiet thank you. We'd be fine." 18 years old. Part of what we're doing today is remembering the courage and devotion of those who saved our island during the hot summer in 1940 and offering our thanks. Jesus said, "Greater love is no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends." Well, the youngsters who flew in the Battle of Britain were all too aware of their slim chances of survival, but carried on. The Roll of Honour in Westminster Cathedral lists 537 pilots from Fighter Command who lost their lives during the period of our history. 537 is actually a tiny amount when you think about it, compared to all the battles and conflicts we've gone through. It's less than lost their lives in the Twin Towers. But when you place this in context of the numbers, the figure in context of the numbers who actually took part, you get some chilling statistics. New pilots had a 50% chance of getting through their first action. 50-50. After five decisive encounters, their survival chances increased by a factor of 20. Many, many didn't reach five encounters. And when I was young, I read lots and lots of books on the Battle of Britain. I watched films like Reach for the Sky, where pilots flung themselves against all these big German formations without fear. And during and immediately after the war, a hero image was created to fit the archetypal fighter pilot. And it wasn't until the 70s and the 80s that historians and some pilots themselves started writing books which were historically more accurate. And in one sense, the superhero image of the fighter pilot took a bit of a knock. They were not without fear. In In fact, nerves were often shredded. Many were physically sick every time they heard a phone ring. And there were instances of pilots landing and not being able to get out their aircraft because they had fallen asleep through sheer fatigue. But they kept on going. And although they weren't aware of it, they demonstrated the greatest love Jesus told us about. Despite the odds being stacked against them, and despite the growing number of empty spaces at the dinner table, they continued to fly. And if they hadn't, and Britain had sought peace terms with the Germans, the world would have turned out to be a far, far different place. If you think about it, the war would have had one of two possible outcomes: Nazi or Soviet domination of Europe. Hitler would have invaded the Soviet Union, as he did anyway, only under more favourable circumstances, and the war there would have been fought out as it was, a war of annihilation, with one or other side the victor. If Hitler had won, Europe from the Atlantic to the Urals would have been under Nazi domination, the consequences of which, in terms of human suffering, hardly bear thinking about. The death camps would have done their work unhindered, and many more millions would have lost their lives. On the other hand, as perhaps was more probable, things might have ended with a Soviet victory. The Red Army would have taken longer to have beaten the Wehrmacht, but when it did, it would have continued to the Atlantic and down to Italy. The whole of Europe, lacking any Western presence on the battlefield, would have been occupied by the Soviets. There may have been less killing than under the Nazis, but what Soviet rule meant came apparent in 1990. Assuming that communism would have collapsed anyway, and it might have lasted a lot longer than it did, the whole of Europe would have been on its knees, with only the United States to pick up the burden of reconstruction. So historically, we do owe the boys who flew in the Battle of Britain our thanks. And members of the Royal Air Force are very proud of the performance of their predecessors. And the Battle of Britain is used to instill the ethos of service into new recruits. But what have these events 78 years ago got to say to us today as we worship in cults? I deliberately asked for Joel 3, 9, 10 to be read today. Prepare. Prepare war. Stir up the mighty men. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am a warrior. Not very well known words, it has to be said. The words of Isaiah are far more popular. And they contradict these words. Because Isaiah wrote, they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Joel says the exact opposite. So he seems to directly contradict the vision of Isaiah. No longer an invitation to nations to follow a world at peace, but a call to arms. Prepare war, stir up the mighty men, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am a warrior. These two passages highlight the clash between vision and reality, a clash which haunts us still today. But it's only when you look more closely you see that there's far more to this seeming contradiction. Because when Isaiah points his people towards a vision of a world at peace, he's not encouraging them to dream idle dreams. He's not encouraging them to deal and indulge in private fantasies to keep them cheerful when the going's tough. He's calling them to a new way of life. Because Isaiah's passage ends with the words, come, people of Israel, let us walk in the light of God. There's no tougher challenge in the Old Testament. Not one of the Old Testament prophets ever offered an escape from the harsh realities of life. Their messages are always challenging. Isaiah's vision was a recognition of the failure of the present and a call to reach out beyond that failure to do something different, a new way which would celebrate God's values. In other words, to walk in the way of the Lord was Isaiah's call to heal the divisions in personal relationships, to heal divisions in the life of the community and the life of the nations of the world. Great ideas. Give them more than 2 seconds serious thought. What it mean to you? What it mean to our country? And you'll realise that it involves a massive cost. Nations working on the premise of justice and honour instead of profit and privilege. The price of caring for other people, not just at home, refugees, incomers, all over the place. The price of being prepared to work within a community of nations free from war, because they are free from prejudices, free from injustice, politics, and inequalities that lead to conflict. That costs. Which leads us to our New Testament reading this morning. Blessed are the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers. What a difference it would make if these voices were heard and acted upon here and throughout the world. And yes, some individuals are prepared to work that way. Sadly, though, I see little evidence of the nations of the world or the terrorist organisations of the world wishing to live by Isaiah's vision and beat their swords into plowshares. Which brings us back to Joel. Joel is not being just a hard-headed realist. He's issuing a warning. Prepare for war, because there are going to be times when you've got no alternative. But remember, there is a bitter, bitter harvest to be reaped. And sadly, it's a harvest that many in our country are all too familiar with. So the Old Testament gives us 2 prophets, Isaiah and Joel, giving us each a choice. And it's a choice which has never been so urgent: to beat our swords into plowshares or our plowshares into swords. Both choices demand a price to be paid. At present, the nations of the world, the terrorists of the world, are not prepared to pay the price of Isaiah's vision. So it requires the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful, the pure, pure in heart, to be heard. Maybe one day, but it's not happening today. So we're left with the warning of Joel. And now we come to another reason why Battle of Britain Sunday, I think, is important. Throughout our history, there have been men and women who are prepared to put themselves in harm's way and pay the price of Joel's vision. It goes without saying that if this hadn't been the case 70 years ago, our lives, if indeed we had them, would have been completely different. Now, those who fought in the Battle of Britain weren't superheroes. They were ordinary folk but ordinary folk who were prepared to stand up and be counted. Yep, in my childhood, they were all glamorised in comics, black and white films, which portrayed a stiff upper lip and, let's go, chaps, carry on. Calm all round. Nobody ever seemed to be scared. The reality is many of Hollywood's more recent films have attempted to portray is they did get scared. They didn't want to die. And to my mind, that's where courage comes in. Courage is about facing fear, carrying on. And the legacy of the few is still with us. And as long as the world chooses to follow Joel's path, we should be thankful that there are those who are prepared to stand in harm's way. Isaiah's vision seems a long way off at this present time. But you know, perhaps, just perhaps, the starting point for that vision is right here. Maybe it doesn't start out there with the nations of the world. That's a cop-out for each of us. It starts with us. It starts as an individual. How we live. How we respond in our relationships to one another. How we demonstrate the love of Christ. Remember what he said in that reading? Light. Is our light shining amidst the darkness? It starts with us all. It can't start nationally. Amen.